You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the 10th Voice. The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
This is The 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
KFI, Trans Talk. This is the Trans Talk edition of the 10th Voice. I'm Sandra Mead, your host. And behind the board is the producer and sound engineer, Linda Wilson. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to be talking about spouses of trans people. We always hear about trans people themselves and their journeys through transition, but we don't really hear that much about the spouses and partners of loved ones who transition. I think there's a very important story to tell there. So today we're going to talk to two spouses who will share their stories with us so we can learn a bit more about their journey and how the difficulties they might have faced. Our first interview guest is going to be Noreen Schwain. Noreen is the wife of a recently transitioned male-to-female spouse. And next up, we'll be interviewing Tara. Tara is the wife of a recently transitioned female-to-male spouse. And, of course, we'll have the community calendar update at the end. But first, let's have a breakdown of the LGBT news for this week. Starting out in Edinburgh, Scotland, on Wednesday evening, the Scottish Parliament voted 98-15 for a bill that would bring marriage equality to Scotland as early as March 2014. The Marriage and Civil Partnership Bill was passed on its first reading, sending it to Parliament's Equal Opportunities Committee for consideration and debate, along with any amendments offered by members of Parliament. The bill will have a second reading in committee and, if passed, would advance to a third and final reading before a final vote by the full Parliament as early as next spring. If passed, the bill would head to Queen Elizabeth for royal assent, and same-sex couples could begin marrying immediately afterwards. The tiny European country of Luxembourg is set to make history by having an openly gay prime minister and an openly gay deputy prime minister. Grand Duke Henry, the country's head of state, appointed Xavier Bettel, the former mayor of Luxembourg City, as the prime minister designate. The 40-year-old Bettel said in an interview Monday that he had selected Etienne Schneider, the leader of Luxembourg's Socialist Workers Party, to be his deputy prime minister. Schneider is also an openly gay politician and currently the minister of the economy and foreign trade. Bettel added that his first priority as prime minister will be to push for legalizing same-sex marriage in that country. In Chicago, Illinois Governor Pat Quinn signed legislation on Wednesday allowing same-sex weddings starting this summer, making President Barack Obama's home state the 16th overall and largest in the nation's heartland to legalize gay marriage. "We understand in our state that part of our unfinished business is to help other states in the United States of America achieve marriage equality," Quinn said before he signed the bill on a desk once used by President Abraham Lincoln. He said part of that mission was to ensure that love is not relegated to a second-class status to any citizen in our country. In Washington, President Barack Obama has lifted a ban on research into the possibility of transplanting organs from one HIV-positive person to another. Obama signed a bill into law Thursday that directs the Federal Health Department to develop and institute standards for conducting such research. It also permits the health secretary to allow such transplants if the research results warrant a change. The safety of the organ transplant process must also be protected. Obama says the HOPE Act is an important step because it will help improve medical care for people living with HIV. In Pennsylvania, a federal judge on Friday set June 9th as the trial date for a lawsuit challenging Pennsylvania's gay marriage ban after rejecting a request to delay the proceeding. U.S. District Judge John E. Jones III also set a timetable for pretrial motions and other paperwork to be filed before the trial at the federal courthouse in Aaronsburg. William Lamb, a former state Supreme Court justice who heads the private legal team that Republican Governor Tom Corbett hired to defend the state officials, said he plans to appeal Jones' ruling to the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals by next week. And in West Virginia, the West Virginia Attorney General's Office said in a motion Friday that it wants to defend in federal court that state's ban on same-sex marriage. New York-based gay rights group Lambda Legal contends West Virginia's Defense of Marriage Act violates the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Lambda Legal argues West Virginia's ban unfairly discriminates against same-sex couples and their children. In addition to its own ban, the state doesn't recognize same-sex marriages that occur in other states. And in New York, prosecutors in New York on Tuesday dismissed a misdemeanor assault charge against a Harlem man who had been arrested in connection with the fatal beating of a 21-year-old transgender woman, Islan Nettles. Paris Wilson, 20, left Manhattan Criminal Court a free man, at least temporarily, as prosecutors said they were not ready to move ahead with a homicide case, as reported in the New York Daily News. Wilson had been charged with misdemeanor assault, but the charges were expected to be elevated because Nettles died in a New York hospital on August 22nd, 5 days after she was attacked. And in Great Britain, Nikki Sinclair, who represents the West Midlands of the United Kingdom in the European Parliament, came out this week as transgender and also as a rape survivor. In her newly published autobiography, Never Give Up, Sinclair reveals that she had gender reassignment surgery in 1995 while still in her 20s. In an interview with The Sun, Sinclair said, "Gender reassignment surgery nearly killed me, but it was something I had to do. If I hadn't become a woman, I would have led a lonely, neurotic life, forever out of place, endlessly consulting doctors and therapists at public expense." In Texas, the city of Houston will begin offering health and life insurance to legally married same-sex spouses of municipal employees, Mayor Anise Parker announced Wednesday. Based on the right to equal protection under the law, it is unconstitutional for the city to continue to deny benefits to the same-sex spouses of our employees who are legally married, Parker said. This change is not only the legal thing to do, it is the right, just and fair thing to do. And in another positive move, the Associated Press reports that Harris County, which includes Houston, has adopted a wide-ranging policy designed to guarantee equal treatment of LGBT inmates. The policy announced last week allows transgender inmates to be housed with the prisoners of the gender that matches their identity and states that discrimination or harassment of any kind based on sexual orientation or gender identity is strictly prohibited. Sheriff Adam Garcia's staff described it as one of the nation's most comprehensive anti-discrimination policies regarding inmates. And that's all we've got for the news this week. And we're back. Our first guest in the studio with us today is Noreen Schwain. Noreen is the wife of her recently transitioned male-to-female spouse, Terry. They've been married for nearly 20 years. They have 6 children and 9 grandchildren. Noreen has worked for the National Weather Service for 35 years and is the Deputy Chief of Hydrology for the Central Region of the United States. Terry came out to Noreen about 10 years ago, then fully transitioned last year. First question, real quick, Noreen, how do you and Terry refer to each other now, as partners or both wives, or you're still married, so how do you refer to each other?
We refer to each other as partners or spouses most of the time.
Okay, very good. I've always wondered that. I think it gets kind of tricky for some mm-hmm. couples. So describe a little bit for us your marriage, your family, before Terry came out to you 10 years ago.
We had a blended family. It was a second marriage for both of us. We had, certainly overall happy marriage, had your typical ups and downs, certainly had challenges with blending families. I had 2 children. Terry had 4. But I never really noticed anything, particularly, that Terry was upset about or something bothering her all the time. And when we talk about it now, she says, well, it was more like a kind of noise in the background kind of thing. She stayed very busy, especially with the computer, and I think that probably helped her.
Right, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you and Terry both work for the National Weather Service, right?
That's right.
I had the pleasure of interviewing Terry several months back. It was a great interview. How did Terry initially tell you about her female nature 10 mm-hmm. years ago? How did she come out to you, and how did you take it?
Well, we were sitting at the kitchen table, and she said, you know, I have something important to tell you. And she was really struggling, and I'm like, oh, no, you know, this is, you know, this doesn't look good. And then she's trying to assure me, it's not bad, it's not bad. So I'm trying to think, okay, what could be not bad, and yet she's struggling so much over. And then she goes, well, remember that time my dad used to say I had this girlfriend in kindergarten, he seemed like so happy, you know, proud of me or something like I was 5 years old, and I went, uh-huh, and he goes, well, it wasn't her so much. I really liked her dress. And I went, are you talking about cross-dressing? And she goes, yes. You know, this big sigh of relief. And I'm like, oh, is that all? Yeah. And luckily for me, about 20 years prior to that, I had caught something on TV, was, you know, going through channels, and I saw, all of a sudden I saw these two women in wedding gowns, and I stopped. And it was Sally Jesse Raphael. Anyway, I was watching the show. It was very interesting. It was a heterosexual couple, and he cross-dressed, and they were remarrying. And I thought, well, that's really interesting. But anyway, that popped into my head when Terry came out and told me about it.
Okay. I can relate to that story so much. When I came out to my ex, it was the same thing. I was just nervous as heck. And then she got concerned and was worried that I was sick, that I had cancer or something, because I was just a mess trying to come out to her. So mm-hmm. I can totally relate to that story. So you were kind of familiar because of television, Sally Jesse Raphael. Mm-hmm. You'd seen a story. So obviously you had some exposure just via TV, but still that must have been a bit of a shock. What were your immediate thoughts and concerns at that time for the next couple weeks? I mean, you must have been thinking about a lot of things and maybe had some concerns, maybe not. But mm-hmm. what was your state of mind after that?
Yeah. Well, the first questions I asked her, you know, that night to start with, was did she have a name and did she feel like she wanted to be female all the time? Right. And then Tom's answer was Teresa, and know that she would, you know, always felt comfortable coming home, secure to, like, home base was back to male mode. Mm-hmm. And so neither one of us, you know, really knew what was the next 10 years had in front of us. The next couple of weeks, you know, really, it didn't bother me that much. I, you know, especially my college life was somewhat diverse.
Okay.
And so I kind of, I had fun kind of helping her out. And I had something to wear that she could wear right away. And then we go shopping and went to all that. So initially, you know, I was pretty good.
Well, kudos to you for being so accepting and tolerant, and kudos to college environments everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're exposed to so much diversity on a college campus that people come away from there generally more tolerant and accepting, mm-hmm. unless, of course, you're going to Liberty University or someplace like that. But I think that's awesome. Kudos to you for being so accepting right out the gate. As Terry began experimenting with her female nature, it sounds like you were okay with it. Did you not have a difficult time going out at first? Were you afraid of being recognized? Did you go out with Terry? Did Terry go out by herself? I mean, did you not have any anxiety about that in the early stages?
Yeah, and we both actually had anxiety about that, and a friend had suggested that I wear a wig. So I did. And once or twice, we did run into people that we knew. They didn't recognize us, and we just hightailed it the other way. But the first place where I think we both felt a little more comfortable, we went down to New Orleans, and just, you know, Terry lived 24/7 her first time doing that as Terry, and that kind of opened a whole new world for her. But it was occasionally we had the, you know, in a restaurant or something. When we started going to just mainstream places and worried about, you know, somebody clocking her as being, you know, male, female. So that was a little uncomfortable.
Right.
But it got easier.
Got better with time.
Got easier. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. We're going to take a real quick short break for a station announcement, and then we'll be right back to continue this interview.
Funding for KKFI provided by the Weekly Forum at All Souls UU Church. This Sunday, November the 24th, Rondi Knott will discuss what manhood means today. What is the meaning of masculinity in today's world? What forces shape the role of men in our culture? All Souls UU Church is at 4501 Walnut Street, one block east of Main in Kansas City. More information is at allsoulskc.org. Listen to the All Souls Forum each Wednesday at 6 p.m. on 90.1 FM KKFI.
And we're back interviewing Noreen Schwain about her journey as her spouse Terry transitioned from male to female. So you mentioned just before the station announcement kind of the difference when Terry went out for the first time as herself full time. Mm-hmm. You guys went down to New Orleans. Prior to that, probably like a lot of us who transitioned when we were older, we experimented initially just in gay bars. It was mm-hmm. a safe environment. And then you started to go out to these other places, and then you were more concerned about being clocked, which is completely understandable. Did you ever have any concerns while all of this is going on? And you're looking, she became more and more comfortable. Did you ever have concerns about your marriage or what this really held for mm-hmm. your children, your family?
Absolutely, I did, because it was progressive. You know, Terry more frequently needed to, to be Terry. And mm-hmm. it got to the point where the only time she was really Tom was at work, which we both worked together. So that, so I did have concerns, can I really do this? And this was even before she decided to transition, but it's like, I'm starting, but when is Tom going to come out and play? You know, I started to really miss Tom, and so right. I didn't know if I could really, you know, hang in there or not.
Right. I can imagine. Did you feel that you went through sort of a grieving process?
Absolutely, and that certainly started when it became, you know, final, permanent, when the decision was made. That she was going to transition. And again, that was a very progressive, and it took a while to figure that out and go get help. And mm-hmm. and then she was diagnosed with being transsexual, and then it became, basically final. This was going
right.
to happen.
Right.
So I definitely went through grieving stages, you know, anger, and I don't think I went through a disbelief. I think it's like I always believed, I believed it.
Right. Well, good for you.
But... yeah, it was difficult, and then it was okay. Now, what do we do? And I, kind of we were a team in the whole planning process, and that was very good.
Right. What concerns did you have about family? You mentioned that you're a blended family,
mm-hmm.
and you guys had been together for a while. I don't know how strong the bond was between Terry and your children, for example. Were you worried about how your family would take it? How Terry's family would take it.
We had an idea of maybe how some would react, who would be supportive and who would not, and our counselors would tell us you might be surprised, on some of that, and we were. Some of my family that I thought would never be comfortable around Terry have been absolutely wonderful, mm-hmm. and the same on her side of the family as well. So we've had, for the most part, almost 100% support by friends and family. It's been really incredible.
That's fantastic. That is so rare. There's mm-hmm. There's usually some pain from somebody. You lose some friends, you lose some family members. So the fact that it's been that smooth has been great. As far as your own journey through all of this, and you can answer this if you want, however you feel comfortable, or you don't have to answer it. You married Terry before transition as a male, and you were in a heterosexual relationship. Mm. Our culture is so very stuck on this gender binary, and heterosexuality And the notion of being gay or lesbian or transgender is, you know, very much ridiculed, and people typically live on the fringes. So were you concerned about, as you were trying to figure out how you were going to make this go with Terry, did that bother you? Did the fact that that would mean you would be living in a lesbian relationship, mm-hmm. or that's how you would be viewed by society? Did you grapple with that at all, about worrying about cultural expectations, mm-hmm. and, you know?
Yeah, yes, certainly, and still am. We go to, you know, restaurants, and, you know, it's like one check or two.
Yes.
Or, you know, some are starting to get to know us, and you wonder how, we know, maybe, you know, what are they thinking, or are they judging, or anything like that. But we're finding our new normal, I would say, and it is difficult. I've had to question my feelings a lot about it. And the nice thing is, you know, while, you know, grieving my husband, you know, I'm fine. You know, the melt factor is coming back. Uh-huh. You know, I used to melt holding Tom's hand.
Right.
And that's
right.
Coming back. So I think that I'm very optimistic that we're on a good road, and hopefully, you know, better than ever.
Very good. I can't tell you how much I appreciate your honesty and openness in sharing your feelings with us. There have to be other couples out there right now in the same state you were in years ago or a year ago after Terry decided to transition. There's other families out there grappling with this right now and wondering if they're going to make it, and just taking it day by day by day. And so it's really important that, you know, we hear from people like you, Noreen. So thank you very much for sharing and being so willing to share that with us. Through all of this, you know, you mentioned the concern there, and you're finding a new normal. What were you worried about at work? You mentioned you and Terry work together. Mm-hmm. I assume you've got a set of colleagues that you primarily work with, or your own set of direct reports. What was your concerns there? How did you decide to tell them, to come out to them? Because it's really a coming out process for you now, too.
Mm-hmm. It was very interesting, neither one of us, I don't think, had concerns at work. You know, it's pretty solid there, very professional environment. Everybody treats everybody professionally. That has not changed. We have some very close friends there as well. They're still good. Terry was after, she was home after facial feminization surgery, and sent the coming out email from home. I was at work. So you could hear a pin drop when that email came out within 10
I bet.
Very short time. The rest of the afternoon was very quiet.
Uh-huh.
I did go to, you know, one person there and talk a little bit, and it was so quiet I think everybody could hear me laugh or something over, you know, something.
Right.
But at the end of the day, one guy came up to me and goes, "Can I just give you a hug?" You know, and he did. But he told me later that felt like Tom had died, and
aww.
He was actually grieving. So, but we've had wonderful support at work, and have no worries there.
And that's great. It's that way, the grieving process. The families grieve, obviously the children, the spouses, the parents. I know my mother and sister have gone through somewhat of a grieving process of their own. Mm-hmm. My ex, even though when I came out, we were no longer married, she still went through a big grieving process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our friends do, too. Our colleagues that have known us a long time, they're mm-hmm. all going to miss that person that they had mm-hmm. come to appreciate and love so much.
Yeah.
As far as you mentioned the facial feminization surgery, when Terry went off and had facial feminization surgery, there's some risk with any surgery.
Mm-hmm.
But then secondly, when Terry was going to come back, you knew that she was going to look somewhat different. And mm-hmm. some of what you remembered as your husband, Tom, that might have been in her face was going to be gone. Were you anxious about facial feminization surgery? And
I was, and it ended up being even a little more shocking than I expected, even after seeing the videos and being prepared and everything. But when you know, the nurse wheelchaired her out, and bandages all over the head, and you can barely see the eyes. I did not recognize her eyes, and that was really frightening,
yes,
to say the least. But it that was short-lived, and every, you know, we moved on from there.
Uh-huh. Have you felt a difference in Terry since the facial feminization surgery? Has that changed her, in your opinion? Has that changed her confidence, mm-hmm. how she carries herself? And does that help you at all as you guys are walking around together, Terry's level of comfort?
It definitely, I feel, and she has said that it definitely makes her more confident. There's no more clocking anymore, so there's no more anxiety about something like that. So that's good. There are definitely changes, but not just from that surgery, but you know, just from the hormones and things in general. You know, there are certainly some permanent, you know, changes. Some, you know, parts of Tom that are gone.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Having gone through this now, where you're at, it sounds like you're still, to a certain extent, taking it day by day, mm-hmm. but things are getting better, and you said that melt is coming back to you, which mm-hmm. is great. What advice would you have for people out there, right, that might be going through this?
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to caution the trans people themselves that are transitioning to, you know, to make sure that they give enough thought to the fact that the people around them are going to have a hard time, and they're going to be going through their own struggles and their own questions. It's a gut-wrenching thing for everybody. Mm-hmm. What advice would you have for, number one, the spouses mm-hmm. of people who are transitioning, and number two, based on how it's gone between you and Terry, what advice would you give to the transitioning person, male to female mm-hmm. or female to male, as far as how they need to, what they need to understand about what their spouse is going through?
Yeah. For the spouses, I would say, you know, day by day, as you said, is definitely the way to go. And to be patient, you know, not to make any rash decisions necessarily right away, you know, to maybe just give it time and give it a chance. Definitely, you know, seek counseling that our counselors have helped us immensely through the whole process, not just for our relationship, but how for Terry coming out and how to how to tell our friends, how to tell our family. For the transitioning person, you know, enough time, you know, giving them enough time and, like you say, some understanding. And again, that counseling really helps. They're going through the transition and very happy about it. In the meantime, those around them are losing the other person, you know, the person left behind, so to speak.
Right.
So, it's difficult.
Yes.
And it requires time.
Did you decide to use separate therapists? Did you do group therapy at all as part of this initially? Mm-hmm. Did you decide to go with separate therapists? What worked best for
yeah.
you?
Well, initially I went with Terry to her counselor, who was, you know, an expert in transitioning, and then I found my own counselor, and I would definitely say too to find someone with that has, you know, LGBT background experience. You know, knowledge of transition. So that worked well, and we also did some group counseling with both our counselors there.
Oh,
just, you know, I mean, over 20 years of marriage, sometimes there's just stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, oh, this is like a whole new start.
Yeah.
And let's tackle some of those things that have always kind of been there.
What a great idea.
And that's what we did, and it has helped immensely.
What a great idea. A new beginning, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, fantastic. Noreen, thank you so much for sharing this with us. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. And Terry looks wonderful, and my best wishes to both of you.
Right. Thanks for having me.
We are going to have a song, and then we'll be up next. We're going to interview Tara, so be sure to stay tuned.
One day I'll grow up, I'll be a beautiful woman. One day I'll grow up, be a beautiful girl. One day I'll grow up, I'll be a beautiful woman. One day I'll grow up, I'll be a beautiful girl. But for today,
And we're back in the studio. Next up, we're going to interview Tara. Tara, oh, by the way, that song was Anthony and the Johnsons, and the song title was For Today, I Am a Boy. Next up, we've got Tara here in the studio with us. Tara is the spouse of a trans man. Tara came out to her mother when she was about 19, not as gay, but simply as having a relationship with another female. And we'll talk more about that here in just a little bit. She primarily dated more masculine women by preference, but never really felt comfortable with society's labels that segregate people according to their sexual orientation and relationships. About 10 years ago, Tara started dating a female at the time, friend, that she had known for a few years. Many years later, Tara's partner asked her to marry, and they were married a little over a year ago in Iowa, so congratulations to the still newlyweds. Their wedding was followed by a wonderful honeymoon in Amsterdam and Paris, the happy couple's first time outside the country, and it wasn't long after returning from their honeymoon that JD came out to Tara as actually a trans man and began transitioning to male. So we're going to talk to Tara. Her situation's a little bit different than Noreen and Terry's. So welcome to the studio, Tara. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Contrary to many people, based on your introduction there, you've never really worried much about labels that our culture uses to define us by sexual orientation or by our relationships with our intimate partners. You've just kind of rejected labels in general. Why is that?
I think that once you start putting labels on things, that really suppresses the brilliance of what that item is. I mean, whether it's a person, whether it's, you know, an entity, you can't define something by a label. So I've never wanted to be just gay or just lesbian or just straight. I mean, I think that everybody is a, you know, they're more than that.
Yes, human being first, right?
Yes, definitely.
I've always thought of these labels as they separate us more than unite us. They're really used to divide us and separate us and control us to an extent.
Yes,
unfortunately, and it really takes away our humanity. We're not looked at as a person. We're looked at as that label.
Exactly.
And you know, I think that in large part goes along with a lot of the angst in society. We had a show here a few months ago where we were talking about pride and shame, and you know, basically how sex, pride and shame are used as modalities of control, basically through controlling sex and our relationships with each other. And it's really comes to the heart of what we're going to be talking about here with you today and some of Noreen's angst that she talked about a little while ago, to where, you know, she kind of worries about what people think of her now when her and Terry go into another place. Do they think they're lesbians? What do they think? And how people respond to them? And your outview, I think, because you were so open and not drugged down by these labels, JD's transition probably wasn't as heart-wrenching necessarily for you.
I mean, there were moments, of course.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it wasn't, you know, completely smooth sailing.
Sure.
Because, you know, there were glitches, but overall, it's been really smooth sailing, and I'm very grateful for that.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm blessed to have an open mind and an open heart, and unfortunately, I think that, you know, some people they get so caught up in what society is going to view them as, or how society is going to take them. Well, realistically, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's unfortunate, but if you can get over that, then the world is really open.
Right.
And love can be really open. And you can, you know, you can love somebody regardless of what their packaging is.
I wish I had known you and talked to you years ago, because I spent, you know, the majority of my life ashamed of myself, hating myself because of these labels. I was trying to fit within the expectations that society had over the label that I was given.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wasn't fitting right. And I grew ashamed of myself. And I was ashamed of myself for the majority of my life until I finally came to terms with it. And most of the people I think of my generation that were in my boat, transsexual, I think a lot of them have struggled with that. And people that are just gay and lesbian struggle with that, I think, all the time.
Well, and you're your own worst enemy.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of the angst that I would have about, oh, what is somebody going to think now? Well, 9 times out of 10, they weren't thinking anything.
Yeah, yeah, very
true. You know,
true.
I mean,
very
it's the 10% out there that, you know, suddenly wants to hate your guts because you're, you know, a different color or a different orientation or whatever the case is. But at least in my realm, 90% of them have been really great.
Right.
You know, so
right.
I just don't focus on the 10%.
Yeah.
You know?
That kind of reminds me, I don't remember the exact quote, but there was a quote from Winston Churchill, who had gone to see an old man on his deathbed. And as the old man was dying, he told Winston Churchill something along the lines of, I've had a lot of trouble in my life, most of which never came to pass. And that's because you spend so much time worrying about everything that's going to happen rather than dealing with it when it does.
Yeah.
And so just what you said right there gave me chills. It brought back that. It brought back that's obviously not the right quote, but it's very similar to that. At your wedding, when we were talking before, you'd given me some information. Although J.D. hadn't come out yet as a trans man, the wedding was deliberately ambiguous as far as J.D.'s gender goes. And you'd mentioned that J.D. at the time was a relatively masculine female.
Yes.
And so as part of the wedding, everything about J.D. was deliberately ambiguous. Describe that. What did you mean by that? And how did your family, many of whom you hadn't seen in years, respond upon meeting your partner?
Well, first off, I think that it was really important to both of us that our wedding was normal. It wasn't going to be a spectacle. It wasn't it wasn't created to bring awareness to anything other than our love. That was the reason we were having a wedding. You know, we went to Iowa and got married. Nobody was there but, you know, a couple of close friends. The reason we threw a wedding was we wanted to show our love, not look how gay we are, or
right.
Look how lesbian we are, or look, we're doing it for, you know, that didn't enter our minds.
Right.
And choosing ambiguity when we were, you know, creating the vows and, you know, talking to, you know, our wedding party about, okay, this is how we want, you know, we want everybody to be classically dressed and, you know, this is our wedding and this is how we want people to perceive it. It was more about the comfort of everyone involved. You know, I didn't want my family, who many of them had not seen me for, you know, 10 plus years, I didn't want them to feel suddenly uncomfortable that they were in this big gay wedding.
Right.
And I didn't want JD to feel uncomfortable that all of a sudden, you know, he was having to be something in that moment that he wasn't, even though at that point I didn't really know what that was.
Right.
But, you know, if suits were what we did, suits were what we did. You know, I wore the traditional wedding dress. You know, the vows we, you know, altered to not mention anything masculine or feminine when we were speaking, you know, about JD. And I'm very secure in my femininity. So, you know, I was glad to be announced as a wife,
right,
as a bride.
Right.
But we shied away from that, you know.
So how, I'm going to ask you the same question I started with Noreen. How did you refer to each other then? And since JD has transitioned, how do you refer to each other now? Is it husband, wife? Is it partner? What we talk about labels. What label are you using right now to describe your spouse?
We are husband and wife.
Husband and wife.
It's
okay.
It's kind of more of a pet name, you know?
I mean, what was it then while you were getting married before transition?
I think, you know, in the privacy of our own home, I was still saying, you know, are you ready to be my husband? You
right,
know,
right.
But it was, at that point, it was playful. You know, I mean, it was just a tagline. It was just a pet name, you know. I always just spoke ambiguous, you know, without gender.
Right.
You know.
And how did your family react at the wedding? You said you hadn't seen most of them for 10 years. Did everything go okay? Was any of them uncomfortable?
If they were, they didn't show it.
Great.
And, you know, I have to give, you know, big props to you know, again, you put so much fear within yourself that, oh my God, it's going to be horrible. And mm-hmm. it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'm sure that my story isn't, you know, isn't the same as everyone else's, but it was really wonderful. Nobody mm-hmm. asked it. You know, I don't know what I thought. I guess I thought that they would pull me off to the side and start grilling me about, you know, what I did behind closed doors. And, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, I had those chatterers in my head that, right. you know, really tried to beat me up about it. But when it actually happened, everybody was just there, and they all commented about what a beautiful ceremony it was.
Wonderful.
And, oh, we were just filled with love, and nobody, you know, pulled me off to the side and said, you know, well, is she really a he? Or, you know, there wasn't that issue. It just didn't
wonderful.
Come up.
Very wonderful. So. After the honeymoon, you go off and you have this great time overseas, which I'm sure was a blast, probably great memories you guys all have forever. After you get back, JD decides to come out as a trans man. Couldn't have done it before the wedding. Comes out after the wedding, after the honeymoon. You get back, and JD says, you know, I'm really a man. I want to transition. How did you take that?
Well, he didn't really come out to me. I think I kind of blew the whistle more than him coming out. We were sitting, you know, everything, I guess, happens around a kitchen table. That's, you know, the drama zone, I suppose. And I don't even remember, you know, there was just this tension in the air that I couldn't put my finger on. You know, we had just got back from, you know, like you said, this fabulous, you know, honeymoon. And there was just this tension. And he made some kind of a comment, and I can't even remember what it was. But I looked at him in my, you know, typical ha-ha, you know, fashion. It's like, what, are you going to tell me I just married a trans man? Completely thinking that was just ha-ha, we were going to laugh about this. Uh-huh. And the silence was deafening. And the air left the room. And he just looked up at me and said, what if you did? And I could tell that he was so scared.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't understand the fear. You know, I did kind of plop down and take a breath, you know, because I was like, wait a minute, I was joking. Wait, this was a joke, right? And no, it wasn't a joke. But, you know, it was like, okay, well, if that's how you feel, why couldn't you have told me sooner?
Yeah, exactly.
And then I instantly started, you know, all of a sudden it kicked in that I needed a label for it. Oh, my God, what does that mean to me?
Right.
That's where the fear and the panic, you know, kicked in again. But right. It dawned on me. It doesn't matter.
Right. But from a label, from a society's perspective, you were living in a lesbian relationship. From society's perspective, you're now living in a hetero relationship. You don't particularly care about the labels yourself, but when you guys walk around town now, has your feelings about your interactions with each other in front of other people changed? For example, you know, I know a lot of gay people, both lesbian and gay males, who are somewhat uncomfortable showing a certain level of affection for each other in public because of the blowback from, you know, conservatives in the area. We live in the Bible Belt. And I know a lot of other people who just don't care. They're going to get out there and they're going to show their affection, and who cares what people think. But now that JD has transitioned, got a good amount of facial hair, as you guys are walking around, you're probably perceived as just a regular heterosexual couple. Has that did you ever feel uncomfortable before publicly in a lesbian relationship? And has this made you more comfortable, or has that shifted your thought process in public at all?
I think the comfort comes from I'm no longer with a partner that doesn't hold his head up. You know, the confidence when we are out and about, I think just it overshadows, you know, any fear or scared, you know, oh, what's somebody thinking? I think that they just look at us and, you know, they view us as, you know, a straight couple.
Right.
And fine. You know, if that's how they want to view us, fabulous. I don't, you know, I've never been one to, you know, wave the gay flag and, you know, get in people's faces. And, you know, it's good that people do that. You know, we need, you know, awareness. But at the same time, I don't want to be single. You know, I don't want to be put in that box.
Right.
So
now, you mentioned JD's confidence. He walks, he carries himself with much more confidence. I can relate to that. Has that not transpired differently when you're in public? Does JD take your hand in public or do things like that that you guys didn't used to do before? Or were you guys always, you know, pretty open and affectionate with each other in public?
We've always been squishy in public.
I mean, good for you.
You know, with good conscience. You know,
right,
I mean,
right.
I don't want to see anybody, you know, overdo it in public.
Right.
Whether
get a
they're
hotel
a gay couple
room.
Or a straight. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, I've always been conscious about, you know, I don't want to push it in somebody's face, but if I want to grab a hand or steal a kiss, we do it.
Yeah, very good. I'm going to ask you about your work now, your work process. So since JD transitioned, I assume your coworkers knew that you had gotten married a year ago and that you were in, again, from their perspective, a lesbian relationship. Everybody's got to have these labels.
Yeah.
When JD decided to transition, did you feel the need to inform your coworkers that your relationship has changed? I mean, how have you come out to your colleagues if that was necessary?
I have not come out to them.
Okay.
But it's not because I'm hiding it.
Right.
It's
none of their business.
It's none of their business.
Right.
And, you know, I let them make whatever assumptions they want. And even before we were married, I never mentioned JD as he or she. It was always, you know,
okay,
JD and I are going to do this. And, you know, they'd see pictures. If they dared to ask, then they deserved whatever answer I, you know, gave them. I'm an open book if you ask me. But it's none of their business. And I've actually had coworkers that has seen JD progress throughout the year now. And, you know, the first one came up to me and said, I saw JD standing downstairs the other day. She's looking really good. And I said, he.
Right, exactly.
And it just
kind of, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it just kind of took my, you know, coworker back. It's like, well, right on, looking good. And that was all it was, you know. I'm like, okay. You know, so I've had a few coworkers that have actually come to me and said, hey, I've noticed some changes. And, you know, because they had the nerve to come up and ask, then I feel they deserve answers.
Okay. But very good. I appreciate your confidence. Again, I, you know, just like Noreen, I really appreciate you coming on the air and sharing all of this. But same thing. There's going to be people out there that are going to be facing the same situation here. And, you know, you're certainly helping them, telling your story. Nobody's story is the same. Every individual trans person's story is unique in our own challenges and struggles, and it's certainly the same with our spouses and loved ones. How they respond to it, how they take it, is certainly unique, but nevertheless, getting your story out there, I'm sure, is helping people. So thank you very much for being willing to come on. Now that you've gone through this, what would your advice be to other people, whether they be male to female, female to male, and their spouses? What would your advice be now, having kind of gone through this transition with JD?
Well, I think some of the scariest stuff was what I read. You know, I joined, you know, different little chat groups trying to, you know, well, I guess that's what I should do next, you know, and I did that. And some of the stuff I read was really scary. You know, and I understand the grieving process because, you know, I did it too. It was very short-lived for me because I realized that the essence of the person I fell in love with, the soul of that person, is still in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's the exact same person. And, you know, I'd read that tea and surgeries and all of this really changes them and, you know, changes their personality and so forth. I don't believe it does.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how they handle the changes within themselves is what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, some people turn into, you know, not so happy go lucky people, you know, going through it, but their inner core is still there. And if you love that inner person, it's still in there.
Right.
Just different packaging, you know, more hair, thicker skin, you know, whatever the case is.
Right.
But
I appreciated the loss of the testosterone and the increase in estrogen in my case. Did you not notice a difference in JD from a testosterone perspective? Is JD not more aggressive?
Actually, JD is more calm now.
Interesting.
I mean, you can tell there's more of, I call it confidence, you know, more machismo or, you know, whatever you want to put on it. But it's just, it's not so up and down. You know, I mean, I know when, you know, when I have the surges of, you know, hormones and it's, you know, whatever, I'm kind of all over the map, you know. And JD is no longer like that. JD is nice and, you know, level-headed. And he knows where he's going and he knows where he's headed. And I'm along for the ride and, you know, it's been great.
Fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic. That sounds like a great story for both of you. I want to thank you, Tara, for coming on and sharing your story. And JD's been grinning ear to ear sitting over there in the corner. So thank you very much for sharing your story. And, you know, I hope you and Noreen both will come back sometime.
Definitely.
So, okay. We're going to switch to the community calendar here for just a minute. Unfortunately, Brent Husher isn't in the office, isn't in the studio with us. Linda, Brent Husher is always so good at doing the community calendar.
He makes it fun, doesn't he?
He surely does. We're going to try to get through this in Brent's absence. So as of today, Saturday, November 30th, coming up next Friday, well, when is December 6th? Is that next Friday? That's the week after, isn't it? Coming up on December 6th at 8 p.m., the Heartland Men's Chorus Holiday Concert. That's going to be at the Folly Theater. I think that's going to just probably be wonderful.
Yes.
Forget the chill in the air. The men of the chorus will keep you toasty warm this winter with fun holiday favorites. So keep that on your calendar.
And they always seem to have a few surprises for you that you don't expect.
Really? I've never been there.
Oh, yeah. It's quite fun.
Awesome. Very good. Well, 8 p.m. Remember that? Friday, December 6th, 8 p.m., the Heartland Men's Chorus Holiday Concert at the Folly Theater. And then on Saturday, December 7th, obviously we'll have the 10th Voice Weekly Radio Show. But at 8 p.m. on Saturday, December 7th, the Heartland Men's Chorus Holiday Concert. Again, if you don't make it Friday, you can make it Saturday. It looks like they've got a show on Sunday, so you've got 3 days to see them at the Folly Theater. The one thing to keep in mind, though, is the Sunday show on December 8th, that's going to be at 4 p.m. And the Saturday show on December 7th, that's going to be at 8 p.m. So both the Friday and Saturday shows are 8 p.m., and the Sunday show is 4 p.m. if you're interested in going to see them. Let's see. On Thursday, December 12th at 7 p.m., there is Mary Princess. It says, this holiday season, get glamorous with the Kansas City Museum. Join GLAMA, the Gay and Lesbian Archive of Mid-America, at Corinthian Hall's famed Casey entertainer Melissa Ryder, the Fairy Queen, assumes the one only. I can't read the notes there that he's got. But 7 p.m. At Corinthian Hall, Mary Princess on Thursday, December 12th. On Saturday, December 14th, we've got the Kansas City Women's Chorus presents I'll Be Home concert. Again, that's at Folly Theater. And then on Sunday, December 15th, we've got the Mid-America Freedom Band concert, Holidays Around the World. That's going to be at the Unity Temple on the Plaza. What is that all about? Well, the description here says a plane ticket might be out of your price range this winter, but MAFB has you covered as we country and culture hop, showcasing the vibrant dive Patapan. Gustav holds gorgeous in this break midwinter, Derbyshire. And then, let's see, looking down the calendar a little bit further.
Actually, I want to remind people that on December the 7th, the Holly Holly Holiday Sale is happening at the Cristo Rey Catholic Church. It's at the corner of Broadway and Westport, Broadway and Linwood Avenue. And it's been, I think it's in its like 30th year, and it's women's crafts.
That's stuff. On the 7th, December 7th?
Mm-hmm. And all woman-made crafts and sale, and other items on sale there.
Very nice.
At the holiday sale.
I didn't see that on the calendar. What time is it? Do you know?
It's Saturday and Sunday, and I think it starts at 9 o'clock. It's from 10 to 5 on Saturday and 11 to 4 on Sunday, I think.
Okay. So there's quite a bit of time during the day people mm-hmm. can get down there.
Right.
And what was it called again, Linda?
The Holly Holly Holiday Sale.
The Holly Holly Holiday Sale. I'm going to have to go check that out. That's all we've got on our community calendar, the short version of the calendar today. Some of those things were a little bit hard to read for me in the description, so my apologies if those made absolutely no sense.
We're going to have to require Brent to come in and make some fun out of this calendar.
Or maybe I'll take a look at them before the show so I can try to decipher how everything is kind of jumbled together there.
But Sandra, I would like to say that I really enjoyed Trans Talk since you became part of it, and you really bring some interesting guests, and it's always an education, and it's such good information for everybody to have. Everybody needs to hear this, and it just makes how great the world can be when we accept everybody as they are, and you're helping to do that. So I want to say thank you for doing it.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I think it's really important that, out of the last few shows, I think it's become quite apparent how a lot of the anxiety and disrespect we have for each other in our culture is really culturally driven. It's not natural. It's driven through cultural expectations, and I think we're driving that home with several of our last shows.
Don't be too different, or you're going to be called names.
Exactly.
The guy, I can't remember the man that was on, talked about shame, but that was really...
Yeah, Dr. Daryl Ray.
That was very informative, and it made me think a lot about how we react to what people talk to us.
I was really happy that we were able to have Dr. Ray in here twice. So he was on Trans Talk, and then he came on with Pierce as well. So I was really glad that we had him on twice.
Good information, always.
Very much. We are getting close to the end here. Before we sign off, I would like to...
Next week, isn't there a fifth Saturday?
There is next week, yes.
And so on next Saturday's show, I believe all of the hosts of the 10th Voice will be in the studio, and we'll kind of have a roundtable discussion of things that are going on in the community in Kansas City and the country and the world. And
That's going to be a lot of fun because you get us all in the room together. It's a hoot.
Well, I'm just trying to make sure we keep Pearson rain because once he starts talking, it's all over.
Very true. I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to the 10th Voice. This has been Trans Talk. Next month, just to give you a heads up, next month on Trans Talk, we're going to be interviewing trans youth. And on the long-range calendar in January, we're going to be talking about the existing medical science related to intersex and transsexual conditions. You're going to want to listen to that because some of the science that we're going to be talking about applies to what we found out about the gay and